I sighted the microphone from the green light to the speed trap. Rick Reno and Jody calls them as they seize them, and you better believe them. Here, relevant news, biased opinion, and outright nonsense regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gas! With mechanical trickery never before broadcast over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Ray and Joe cuss each other down track. Barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disasters as they shake hands with the devil. All that and so much more at high noon this Sunday on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and the Live Feed, Ray Garino and Joe D. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free every Sunday at noon on WHBC. Take the Hempstead Turnpike to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway sign. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Even!
I don't know about you. I'm trying to live for the sun. I don't see any.
Yeah, I don't know. Kind of snuck out for a little bit yesterday, but...
That was yesterday.
Back, yeah.
So here on the sunless Motor Mouth Radio Show, Long Island's only automotive talk show, you have your host, Ray Guarino, his co-host, Wingman and XO, the man at the con when I step out to do some Romulan business is Mr. Joe D.
Hey, good morning.
Good to see you again today, Joe. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, well, you know, it's always fun to get together, sit there, swap horror stories and sometimes pictures.
Absolutely. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we should make that more of a secure, encrypted, because we don't need any evidence laying around.
You got that right.
It happens, you know?
Very true.
What we got going on today, Ray?
Well, we got a catch-up day. We're scheduled to talk to Mr. Nick Diulio from the Insurance Institute. He'll be calling in to talk about insurance trends. We do this every once in a while. We keep these guys in the loop. Until then, you can get in touch with us at 516-572-7440 or check us out on the web, motormouthradio.com. You can follow us on Twitter at motormouthradio or on Instagram, which is real_motormouthradio.
Yeah, we're all over the place now.
And Facebook, Faccia Bruta, we're on there too.
Yeah, you can't get away.
No, that's true.
That's it. Pretty much, you know, it's you know, you can't not go on an electronic device and not find us putzing around out there, putting up all kinds of fun stuff. And, you know, thanks to our social media mogul there.
Yes, absolutely. We have been prompted in the right direction.
Yes, I've been managing to find the on switch on most of my devices. That's about it. You know, the rest of it, we just leave to people who are much more talented and into that stuff.
Well, I actually was told that through sources that you're doing a good job at that. You've been posting stuff up there. You've been putting stuff up, as have I.
Yeah.
And of course, the cool thing is nobody knows who's actually doing it.
Exactly. Yeah.
You
know, see,
because you, myself, or our web director, he could do it too. And if you're really sharp, you can tell who it's not. Maybe, you know, if you really know us, you could tell who it's not.
You could tell the styles,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
But I think for the casual observer or the people who are new to the feed, there's a couple new followers on Twitter that caught on. They wouldn't know. And any ideas? Then call us and get involved with this, and you know, and we'll talk. We'll get to know you. You'll get to know us.
Yeah, right. And you know, there's some funny stuff out there. Actually, I'm thinking of starting to carry around a. One of those strap-on video cameras, you know, that...
Oh, really?
Yeah, you strap it to your head and, you know, like... You ever see those guys that do YouTube videos, like, say, Scandana or Eric the Car Guy? There's a few of them out there. And I was always wondering how they manage to document what they do, because some of the stuff that I see in the course of a day, you know what I mean? It would make some interesting stuff on the various social media is there, but although it would probably be an hour, we'd probably have to be edited down to about maybe 6 minutes once you take out the obscenities and insults.
Know, and I have to tell you, I have seen some of those guys who do the video camera on the head, and some of the guys who use a handheld like a phone. And because I watched a couple of you know, I want to see a specific procedure or something, and you go, you Google it, and you find it on YouTube. And if I see, the first thing I see, if I see the camera come, like, swooshing from the side, and, right. and then it's doing this while he's, you know, guy's holding the camera and trying to do something with his other hand, I'm tapping out. It's like, no, you know what?
Yeah, that's what makes me crazy. It makes me nauseous, too, a little bit.
Exactly.
It's like...
And the head one is the same thing, because now the guy's moving and bobbing and weaving. It's like you, like you're in the ring with Rocky, you know?
Yo, Adrian.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to be Apollo Creed and just get whack.
Mentally irregular after that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But there is something to be said for that, because sometimes I know I come across some pretty cool stuff. Like yesterday.
You do.
Yesterday threw a 2014 or 2015 Mitsubishi Outlander. And I'm like, okay, what's the matter? It's got no brake lights.
Okay.
I'm like, it's a like a 15. Send it back. It's under warranty. No, no. Customer wants us to do it. I'm like, okay. So go and look at the car. You know, and of course the boss puts his, why don't you check the fuse?
Uh-huh.
Because first thing I'm doing is I'm sitting down and I'm looking at the wiring diagram. I'm going, yeah, right. Maybe you'd be right. So I go out to the car. And sure enough, there's no brake lights.
Okay.
And then...
All three of them?
Well, you see, that's the fun part, because I couldn't tell, because I'm sitting in the car, you know, with no way of seeing how the brake lights are working.
You got to back up to a 7-Eleven.
Right, right. Or, you know, or something. So actually, I just grab the oil change kit, and I say, here, stand there, count the lights.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
And he's like, there's only one light. I says... There are supposed to be three lights. There's only one light.
Okay.
There are four lights. And then, Star Trek reference.
Right.
So basically, at that point, I'm like, huh? So, of course, I checked the fuse just for the hell of it. And the wiring diagram shows, well, everything goes through, but the center light works. And I'm like, this is like a, like I said, 14, 15 car, pretty clean.
Right.
Doesn't look like it was hit or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I pull out the one... taillight, and sure enough, there's power going to the stoplight while the kid's stepping on the brake pedal.
Okay.
I pull out the other one, there's power stepping on the brake pedal.
And you determined that with the test light?
Yes.
Okay.
Good old-fashioned test light, you know, mm-hmm. scope on a rope, as some people refer to it.
I like that.
Yeah, that's Eric O. from South Main on YouTube there. He's one of my favorites.
That should go in the Motor Math Radio decoder, scope on a rope.
Scope on a rope, yeah.
Yeah.
And I pull out and go, wait a minute, these are new bulbs.
New, as in...
N-E-W. Never ever worked.
And right.
I'm like, wait a second. And I'm looking. It's like 1157.
Oh no, that's wrong.
1157 on like a 20, like on a late model car.
That's what goes in our cars.
Right. Exactly. And so I'm like, but it's a dual contact bulb. Start doing a little research. Find the Mitsubishi part number. Spend the next 5 minutes cross-referencing that to, like, a generic part number. They're 1034s.
Oh, wow.
And the contacts and the pins, basically what it is, even though the 1157s fit in there just fine, is that everything just kind of rotates just a little bit off, and now the bottom contacts are not touching.
Right.
And found a couple 1034s rattling around the bin.
Yeah.
You know, the boss is like, what do you want those for? Do you want? Yeah, I said, I don't see them. Let me, you know, order me some. He said, no, no, we got them. They got them. He's opening up his drawer. He's, you know, taking out his bottle.
It's 127 numbers lower than what we should have, right?
Pop. Done.
Yeah. You know, Easy.
Yeah, piece of cake. But, you know.
See, now the thing is, here's where there's that disconnect between, there's a lot of disconnects in this business, but there's a disconnect between a shop owner and the technician.
Right.
Where this guy is presumably paying a technician rate for something that an idiot should, you know, should have been able to figure out, but it took someone of your caliber to actually do that.
Because they were
so,
like,
good for him.
Yeah, because he had the stoplight switch there, he had all the stuff ready to go. I'm like,
right.
Stop. Think.
Brake control modules, master cylinder, yeah, proportioning valve. Yeah, that's a fix.
Yeah. But it's just like, this doesn't make any sense. And the giveaway was the third light. Looking at the wiring diagram, it's like, well, if the third light works, the fuse is good, the switch is good,
right.
The wiring's good. You know,
right.
The ground was good.
Yeah, yeah. The other half of the T-shirt worked.
Yeah. That's it.
See, that's why I asked you originally, because I know that the reason that's a third brake light is so it works independently if the other ones go out.
Well, actually, this one, strangely enough, is redundant.
Right.
It's not redundant.
It's not redundant, yeah, which is kind of redundant. Yeah.
But But just a stupid little thing like, oh, you know, the guy probably, you know, I think the owner might have tried to fix this.
Okay.
Or another shop, not sure. But they did nice branded new Philips long life bulbs. You know,
right, right.
Nothing because they were not the ones for the car. These days, there's no more generic.
Yeah.
Give me a couple of stoplight bulbs. Give me, you know, hey, give me a couple of headlight bulbs. All that stuff is all different now.
You know, we try to explain to people that not even oil or transmission fluid or coolant is generic anymore.
They laugh at you.
I know.
They laugh at you. We were having that discussion about coolant in a late model Ford, and this particular guy had the coolant in there since 2009, 2008, whatever the year the car was. But the stuff was clear, past the freezing point, not excessive pH or anything like that.
Right.
You know what I mean? And but it was only ever topped off with the correct Ford coolant.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And that's what happens when you mix stuff.
Yeah.
Mixing stuff is bad, especially antifreeze.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I know that orange Dexcool with plus green regular antifreeze
equals
brown mud.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I've actually seen that.
Unlike Mud's Women, it would be, this would be Mud's
not nearly
goop.
As pretty.
No, not nearly. You know, that's the thing. I brought down to the shop last week. I got this, it's a nice little round cylinder full of litmus paper, test strips. One half does brake fluid, the other half does coolant. And I explained how now you can show a customer when you walk up to the car and I just open the hood and like bad brake fluid. But you could see it. It's coffee.
No. Yeah, exactly.
and try to explain to somebody why that's bad and why they should pay to have it flushed. But now you can do the litmus paper test and show them right on the thing. Everybody knows how to do a pool test pretty much. That's what it is like.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You show them like, okay, this is the brake fluid is full of copper. That's way off the scale. It's purple. And you know, you can show the coolant the other way as acidic.
Well, that's maintenance. Yeah, that should be done.
So that's a nice little visual thing you can show people to
yeah, and you gotta use the right stuff there too. Although brake fluid is fairly standardized,
right.
You know, you just sometimes like, you know, the better stuff, quote unquote, like the silicone brake fluid and whatnot.
Right, 5 and 5A.
You don't want to be messing with that in a lot of cars. I know on cars with like say hydraulic stoplight switches, it just eats them alive. Next thing you know, usually
ask Paul.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what I was thinking.
My buddy Pirate Paul went through that on his dune buggy with original. He was using Bosch switches, I think, right?
Right.
You know, for the VW.
Well, what happens there is I know the ones from my company are also, what they don't like that stuff is because when they were engineered, you know, 1,000 years ago, what happened is that stuff didn't exist, and the materials were not, you know, they didn't exist, and nobody updated it because, for the most part, people like that tend to stick with you know, what came in the car down to the original. Fluids.
It's kind of hard to design something for something that doesn't exist. Unless you have that time continuum thing where you can go forward and say, okay, in 30 years, what are they going to be using?
Yeah, time machines for these guys are doing different things. Like, is it time to go home yet?
There you go. What time is lunch?
They couldn't care less about what brake fluid you're going to use.
Yeah, exactly.
So basically it comes down to use the right stuff. And when it comes to things like fuses, bulbs, you know, headlight, taillight, whatever, your owner's manual is your friend. That
Absolutely.
Stuff is in there.
Yeah.
All right. You may want to bookmark it ahead of time. Put a little scrap of paper in there so you can find it.
Mm-hmm.
Because just wandering into, you know, these days, the auto parts stores pretty much want to be one of the mass market retailer types there. That, and... You're not going to get, you know, you grab something off the pegboard, off the hook, whatever, and you walk over and you pay for it. And I know from being a parts guy for a long time is that if somebody walks up with something that that didn't quite look right, I'm like, oh, that's kind of strange. What kind of car you got there?
Yeah.
Or if you know the customer, you know, no, that doesn't go in your Ford. You know, right. I think you should go and grab the other, you know, whether it be fluid or bulbs or something like that.
Exactly.
But if you don't know, look it up. Especially anything in the last 15 years or so. You know, because before that, like, you know, taillight bulbs, everything was an 1157 pretty much. You know,
56
what I mean?
for the
Right.
The, you know, it was the, and headlights were, what, you got the four, you got the two. You
right.
know, it's a big
right.
deal, right? But
they threw us a curve and it made them rectangular.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know what?
I suck at geometry, so that really killed me.
We're going to throw a curve now. We're going to bust out our surfboards, take a quick break, and hopefully come back with Nick. Yeah, well, you'll see. We're going to start to catch that wave that's coming in right behind you, and you'll see why. And we'll be back with Nick Doolittle in a minute. Keep that drum beat going, Joe.
Is that what I think it's going to be?
Almost. We'll be right. Well, not wipe out. We're right back on Motor Mouth Radio.
I'm Rob Leonard, host of Beatles Songs for the past 24 years right here on WHPC. Beatles Songs airs every Friday from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m., playing the music of the Beatles together, apart, along with Beatle cover songs and songs the Beatles covered, along with songs a Beatle either guested on and or produced. And of course, we provide Beatle news. It's not the same show where they play the same 10 songs. So join me every Friday for Beatles Songs. 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. on 90.3 WHPC, the voice of Nassau Community College, streaming at ncc.edu/WHPC.
That's a nice Mercury marquee pulled up over there.
You pulled that crest beautifully. You were on the pike, my ho-dad friend. Let me tell you, you kind of just nailed that.
Yeah, I was hanging 14. Oh, wait.
You were hanging something. I don't know what it was. But you know what? Let's hang out on a phone. We'll go back and say, hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
Hello.
Hello, Cole. You're on with the Motor Mouths.
I can hear you being quiet.
I guess that was that. All right.
I always scared another one. You know, hey, that's all right.
I would be remiss if I didn't mention, Joe, our good friend Cliff sent me this notice. Of course, everybody's using big Mustang Mach 1s. That the Miller Ridge Inn is kicking off their season April 18th, which is next Wednesday. That's on 585 North Broadway, and they have a cruise night every Wednesday. And I haven't been to it, but what I hear is they have girls come out, waitresses, and you can take like a drink order or an appetizer order, and the stuff is like half price.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
So, of course, all the moochers go there, and they eat for half price, and they load up before they go home.
I mean, the Miller Ridge, do they come out in those colonial costumes and stuff?
I don't know. I haven't been there, but I'm hoping to get there this summer. But that kicks off on the 18th, so let's do this again. We'll go back to the phones and say, hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
Good morning, boys.
Mark, how are you?
What's going on, man? I just want to give you an update on the Mercury station wagon brake story.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Sable story.
Well, as you know, I put those drill and slotted rotors on.
Right.
Okay.
And I got eccentric brake pads for it.
Right.
Okay. I've been using it for all the other cars, and they work great. Anyway, when I push back the pistons, they went back so easy and nice on both sides.
Right.
And I got in the car, and I started driving it around. A little bit hard to stop at the beginning, but I guess that's because everything was new. And it wore in a little bit. But every now and then, every time, like if I'm on the parkway and I step on the brake,
right.
It feels like the car wants to go to the right slightly. It doesn't go. It stays straight, but it has that feel to it. And it's quite annoying.
So you have the GPS plugged into the brake system and it's trying to...
You would think, right?
I was going to say, independent of the brake caliper issue or the hose issue that you have, did you do the bedding procedure for the new pads and rotors?
I went online, I looked it up, how to do it, and I did.
It actually comes with the centric parts. They actually include it on the box, and they put a sheet in there with the pads. They're very good about that.
I don't recall seeing that, but I did it anyway.
Okay.
You know?
Good idea.
And
very important.
I said, I opened the bleeders, and I pushed the pistons back, and there was no issue, like always.
It just seems they don't want to come back the other way, though. Or one of them does and the other one doesn't.
It's like the left side is not really working as hard as the right side is for something. Like, not a lot. It just has the car kind of...
The car goes to the left.
The car goes to the right.
No, the car goes
straight, but it feels like it wants to go to the right.
When you brake, it does what? I thought you said when you brake, it wants to go to the left a little bit.
When I step on the brakes, like at parkway speeds, it feels like it wants to shift to the right slightly.
Okay,
right.
So either the right caliper is working and the left one isn't to the same degree.
Right.
You know,
I was just thinking of changing the caliper and being done with it. I mean, they're like $30.
Yeah, and then get the hoses.
Yeah.
And I had no issues with the hoses.
It doesn't matter. You're going to open the system. You're going to change the caliper. Put the brake hoses on it. You're right there.
Right. It's not a bad idea, actually.
And also, a hose could have a slight restriction in it.
That's why I said calipers or hoses earlier, because the hoses collapse from the inside. It's like it's like an artery.
That was a thing I see a lot on, like, say, G-body.
GMs, yeah.
G-body cars, you know, Camaros. They would have an internal kink for whatever the reason, and the car would do some funky quick turns on you there, you know?
Yeah, and it would lock up because the fluid can't go back through it.
Right.
Exactly.
Quick and dirty, low-tech thing on that is you get yourself a couple of small containers, you know, like baby food jars, something like that, and some hose. Crack the bleeders, all right, and, you know, slip the hose over the bleeders and walk away from the car. You know, make sure that the reservoir is full. And let them gravity bleed?
If they will gravity bleed, yeah.
Yeah, they usually do.
Yeah.
But what happened there is if you gravity bleed and you see that one jar is noticeably lower than the other jar, then you know that there's some type of restriction, which usually is the hose.
Then again, let me ask this here. Let me riddle this. Mm-hmm. In the left and right side, the left line and hose is a shorter path than the right side because it has to travel across. So one could theorize that it would take longer for the right side to drain the same amount as the left side. No?
Yeah, that's true.
I've never done that exact test.
John Rogers actually showed me that a long time ago.
Okay.
Damn, you know, I was like, God, you know, God bless that, you know, at that point.
Then again, it may be the fluid dynamics thing of, you know, fluid seeking its own level.
That's part of it, too. If it's hydraulics, you know, the fluid and the fluid's all the way there, that pretty much.
Okay.
I mean, the replenishment might be a thing, but I have caught a few like that. It's like I said, it's not high tech. It's not very precise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless you want to sit there and draw a whole bunch of little lines on your baby food jar. But
hey, you could just get graduated cylinders.
Yeah.
Now, you know what, Mark? I think the end all, if you're going to do calipers, just buy hoses at the same time and be done with
it. Yeah, and do both sides. And just then, cock the shotgun, get it over with.
But now, I just went through this. In exhaustion, I went through this with brake lines. I replaced all of them on the car because the fittings were all frozen to the line, and the only way to change them was to cut them out and put in all new stuff. So make sure, you know, really hit that. I mean, I'm going to tell you to really dose the fittings where the hard line goes into the hose well in advance of doing it. But
spray them up, yeah.
You may never be able to do it enough. And I have the pictures to prove it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so good luck. I hope that works.
Some of those pictures we're talking about there, yeah, you got to spray them ahead of time. Use some good quality penetrant type stuff there. WD-40 is a little bit on the wimpy side. You want to go with like Croil or PB Blaster.
I started with PB Blaster. I used Croil and I used John Day from Pathfinder Lubricants. I used his Flowtorch, which was guaranteed to get in there. And then I used the inductor.
Right.
And then I used the Dykes. I was like, okay, I've used everything I have. DEFCON 4. We're out.
At that point,
I'm
violence.
Maybe it's possible some air got into the.
Well, then you'd have a mushy pedal.
No, it's not. It's not.
Right.
But I got to tell you, when they were brand new, when I started to use them, I really had to lean on them to stop.
Right until they bedded in. Yeah, sure.
Yep. And like I said, it's fine. It's not. I don't feel it's dangerous. It just has like a little. I can feel it. Even though the car goes straight, it drives me nuts after a while.
Oh, yeah. No.
Any chance that you got something loose in the front end?
No. The car, it was fine. You know, see, that was one of my thoughts because before I had changed the rotors, they were wore pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it was okay driving around town, but on parkway speed, you go to step on them, and the wheel wanted to jump out of your hand.
Yeah.
I figured something...
Been there, done that.
Yeah, you know, because wiggling back and forth a lot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So...
I would say it might be just time to load the parts cannon and do both sides too.
It's like 99, so it's they have their time on the hoses also. So
yeah,
absolutely.
Well, it's got like 80,000 miles on the car. So
Mark, if I forget to send you some pictures later on today of the interface between the fittings and the lines that I took off on the Buick Grand National, then just get back to me and remind me, because I'll show you. That right in between at the interface where the line is in that fitting, it was solidly rusted, and I think there was no chance of me ever getting it apart. And I only found that out when I had it out of the car and sectioned it.
Right. Yeah. That's what I mean. You gotta sit there and That's why you lube them up really good, and then you just kind of rock them and rock them back and forth and see what happens. Because if not, then you have to prepare yourself for what comes next.
Sometimes if you apply a decent amount of heat to them,
right?
You know, but
well, I use the inductor, and that didn't work either. So
right,
that's that thing you wrap around and it turns red.
Correct. Well, it does. Yeah, it just inductively heats it. It doesn't really change color, but you'll see smoke.
Yeah. My goodness, and that didn't work.
No. So yeah, I had to change the hard lines.
That's close to a 30 roll car though. I mean, he's only a 20 roll car, so
yeah, right.
Maybe right. We got a little while to go.
Yeah, no, very very yeah. Yeah. So
right, well, next day it gets warm, that's what I'll be doing.
Okay. Yeah, next day it gets warm, whatever that is.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yesterday it was so nice and the day before last night it turned bad.
Right.
Oh well. All right, guys. Look, you have a good day. We'll chat soon.
Okay,
all
right. Mark.
All right, thanks for the info.
Thanks.
Take care now.
Bye-bye. So long. Bye bye. All righty. Nick D'Elia was trying to get through. He couldn't. 572-7440. Right. I have to say the number. So I know what it is.
I know. They took it down from the wall. They put the donation number.
The 7438 number's up there. Yeah. So maybe Nick will get to us now. So you know what? Hopefully we'll be back with Nick. And meanwhile, if you, like us, like all different types of music, you may want to listen to The Country Show. Fridays at 9 a.m., hosted by Colton Murray and Leanna Lewis.
Good.
Yes, it is. It's contemporary country, and it's showcased along with interviews and legendary artists and all sorts of cool stuff. So you can check that out Fridays at 9. The other thing I wanted to mention, Joe, was there's a car show coming up in a couple weeks. This is the looks like the old cruise to the show, but it's not.
I was going to say, yeah, looking at the style of the writing from what I can see over here.
They just lift it right off. This is at Tobey Beach, Saturday, April 28th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Information, you can call 516-624-6380. Free to spectators, free parking, independent judging and trophies, Kids' Choice Awards, restaurant and food items, free concert by that 70s band, and our good friends from the AutoZone will be down there with a couple of cars, so you can go check
cool.
that out. Let's go back to the phones. We'll go back to the phones, say hi with the Motor Mouth. You're on the Motor Mouths.
Hey, this is Nick D'Elia from Insurance Quotes.
Hey, Nick, how are you?
How are you doing?
Very good. Good to talk to you guys.
Yes, excellent. I'm glad we were able to. Good thing you have my cell phone number. You're able to get in touch
right.
with us.
Yeah,
and listen,
right.
That you was... know, this we don't have this down to an exact science yet. So I mean,
hey,
science, come
no
on,
worries.
It's voodoo.
Right.
Come on, let's make a little bit of sorcery. No science.
Right. So Nick, you want to tell us today about a very interesting topic? Lay it out for us. Tell us what's on the plate.
Sure. Yeah. So this is. The fifth year in a row now that I've written an article about a vast survey of all 50 states and what it means to your premiums, your insurance premiums, when you file even so much as a single auto claim. And we take a look at every single state and what different types of claims or how different types of claims are going to impact your premiums. And we rank the states from sort of the states where you see the biggest impact, like, for instance, New Hampshire filing a single claim, you're looking at an average premium increase of 66%. You know, they're at the top of the list, all the way down to a state like Kentucky, where a single claim is only going to, you're going to be looking at about a 19% premium increase. And just sort of taking a look at, you know, what that means for, you know, drivers in those individual states. And I think a lot of folks are pretty surprised to see just how substantial these bumps in the premiums can be after filing just one claim.
I mean,
I had to shiver up my spine after reading that.
Yeah, we've all been in that world, and like Joe and I both have kids who drive, and they were younger when they started, obviously, and
sure.
we've all seen ours. But I know it's certain, like even where we live on Long Island, there's Brooklyn. Certain areas are just higher than others. Why is that, Nick? What dictates the way that that those fees are?
That's a really, really good question, and it's actually it's a nuanced answer that really isn't the same for all places. So a lot of it comes down to mm-hmm. how individual states regulate insurance, the rules about certain factors, what can determine what you pay for insurance. For instance, in a state like California, you know, you're pretty much limited to using only driving-related criteria for pricing people's insurance policies. So that means you can't use things like credit score or marital status.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the ways that states regulate insurance on that level also determines how much they can increase your premium, because there's certain limits to that as well. So, you know, in a state like New York, let me see, you guys were kind of down towards the bottom. New York, a single claim is going to bump your premium on average by about 31%, which is still, that's...
Yeah,
you know,
that still hurts.
Now, you know, that's the thing, like a state like California or New York, like we're on this little island that hangs off the bottom, but there's a lot of New York above us where the population density is less. We're jam-packed down here. You know, we're in the suburbs,
right.
So we're very tight. So to say, you know, that's why I always get my antenna go up when I hear, you know, based on where you live in the state of New York, I'm like, wait a minute, if you go upstate New York, you're seeing cows, chickens, farms, and tractors, you know, down here. You know, we're and I understand we're in the bad part for that, but I always wondered how that was factored in or whatnot. Now, the other thing I was curious about was what about the topic that a lot of people don't ever want to talk about, insurance fraud? How does that factor in?
Well, you know, fraud. Insurance companies, you know, build into their pricing a certain amount for anticipating insurance fraud, and so you're kind of subsidizing the average driver is sort of subsidizing the cost for insurance fraud. So that's kind of rolled into your premiums. You know what you're paying in terms of how the insurance company anticipates that there's going to be a certain amount of fraud in you know, in a given year. Now, how that, you know, how they figure those numbers, that's all sort of proprietary information that they're mm-hmm. not too keen on sharing, you know, specifically. But and in terms of how it impacts, you know, your premium, it's really going to depend on how that individual insurance company sort of measures the risk of fraud and how much they need to build that into their pricing. And in terms of whether or not fraud is on the rise or not, it seems to, I wrote a piece about a year and a half ago suggesting that insurance fraud is kind of leveling out. It's not necessarily, you know, in the auto space anyhow. Mm-hmm. We're not seeing any sort of spikes, you know, on a nationwide scale any more or less than, you know, things have been in the past.
That's good. We have a close friend of the show here who does. He's an appraiser, but he does forensic appraisal. So when the insurance companies get a whiff that something may not be right at a shop or about a specific claim, this guy, he'll go in. His company goes in and he'll have to look at that car, and he uses a whole other set of tools and devices. And he oftentimes finds out that, yeah, you know what, it's not claimed what it's supposed to be. And usually those people want to back out of the court case, but it's too late. It's like, nope, sorry, you're here. You've already wasted our time. You're on the hook.
And oh, sure.
Good thing those guys are
there's
around.
Like, there's, you know, really zero tolerance in that regard when it comes to insurance fraud. They, you know, as soon as you've set the chain, you know, as soon as you've set things in motion, you know, you're very much on the hook, like you said.
Right. They follow Newton's law. Body in motion tends to stay in motion.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So do freight trains.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, we as parents of kids who drive and even just as drivers in general, I think everybody's a little skittish about making that claim, because we've all heard the stories of, oh my God, your insurance is going to go up so much. And I've made claims in my driving career and really not had spikes in my insurance. So it's
And it depends on the, you know, like I said at the outset, it does kind of depend on the type of claim that you file, and also sort of the at fault laws in a given state also can come into play in terms of how much you're going to see. So it's not, I don't discourage people from filing a claim. I mean, obviously you got to do the math. If it's a fender bender that, you know, you could just take care of out of pocket, or, you know, figure that out with the other driver, sure, you know, you're not going to file a claim for a, you know, $300 fender repair or something like that, right?
Right.
But, you know, you do have to keep in mind it could have a significant impact on your premium if, you know, if you do decide to file that.
And
that claim.
Yeah, if you're at fault, I know that they'll assess the amount of liability of who was at fault in what percentage. And if you're on the wrong side, if you're over that, if you're higher than the other guy, well, it's going to cost you more. It's going to cost me.
Yeah, of course. If somebody plows into you doing like 30, you know, your percentage is going to be a lot less than the guy that did the hitting. By the way, we were asked, what about the accident forgiveness that some of the companies?
Yeah,
fanfare.
You know, we're seeing anybody who even just a casual consumer who watches television and sees the type of marketing that's going on now with auto insurance sees, I'm sure, is familiar with that phrase, you know, accident forgiveness. A lot of insurance companies are getting into that game. What's kind of tricky, and I don't mean to sort of sound cynical about it, but they've built that accident forgiveness into their pricing already. Mm-hmm. So in a way,
they already forgave you.
Right. You're already paying a little bit more. And then they can say, oh, well, look, you know, this first one's on us, right? This first accident, we're not going to ding your premium.
Yeah.
But that sort of gift, if you will, quote unquote gift, is already being subsidized by other people's premiums and what you're already paying.
Paid for that for the last year or two. Yeah.
Well, it's like the county, the state, and the federal budget. We're at the bottom of the triangle, and that's where the money comes from. It goes up from there. You know,
it's the opposite of what rolls downhill.
So yeah, that makes sense. But it does pay to be a good driver, and of course not have claims and things like black marks on your score. So that's
sure. Yeah. That's good. And the insurance companies are very clear about that. Anytime I do this article or other articles about the impact of filing a claim, they're very keen to tell drivers this isn't a penalty, right? We're not raising your premium because you filed a claim and now we're sort of slapping you on the wrist. Instead, they say, well, since you filed one claim, you're now that much more likely to file a second claim, which makes you a more expensive customer to us. That's why we're now charging you more, because our data shows that, you know,
and here's your slap.
Which is an interesting correlation, because hey, listen, accidents happen, so maybe this is a single event and may never be replicated. I mean, you know, it just could be a standalone, and so people would say, well, why don't they give me the benefit of the doubt that this was just a one-time deal? So I don't know, you know, it is what it is. So just
and they love playing with data. I mean, insurance companies are just they have a field day with data analytics and coming up with these, you know, proprietary models of pricing based on likelihoods and et cetera. So yeah, it's a complex system that they've got.
You know, I know people who still follow the dictum that they believe that if they drive a red car, their insurance will be higher and they're more likely to get speeding tickets. And, you know, there's all sorts of little legends.
Right.
So can you speak?
Male drivers versus female drivers.
Which I found to be untrue now. Yeah. Can you speak to any of those, Nick? Are they?
I mean, and that's there. Some of that stuff is kind of urban legend, kind of apocryphal, if you will. But there are, and again, it depends on the state in which you live. Some states are super tightly regulated, like California. Like I said, the only things that they can use to determine your cost for your auto policy are strictly related to driving behavior and length of time behind the wheel, right? How long have you been driving, et cetera. Other states, there are myriad factors that they use to determine what you pay, and your marital status, your gender, your credit score, your annual income. I'm trying to think of some of the others.
I did read, and I'll admit, I think I read it in the AARP magazine a while ago, that people who were married for a longer period of time had better, higher credit scores and hit those demographic markers had lower insurance than other people. And I said, wow, you know, the way that they're they're disseminating this information is really interesting. I know myself, like when I hit 25 years old, I saw a drop, and then I think when I hit 30 or something like that, there was another. Then I got married, of course, it was around the same time. I got another little drop.
Yeah. Right.
And I guess, yeah, it's, I mean, I was happy.
You checked the right boxes there, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, and they'll say, there are, and I've spoken to plenty of activist organizations and nonprofits who are very much against insurance companies using a lot of this ancillary data, because they're saying, look, just because an insurance company will say, hey, look, the data pans out. Married people, for instance, are X times less likely to get in an accident than single people. They don't know why that's the case, right? But they can point to numbers that show it. And a lot of folks who are against, you know, using data this way say, look, you could create all sorts of really nuanced pricing models, like people with red hair are more likely to get into an accident. So if you have red hair, you're going to pay more, right? Like, where does it stop?
Right.
You might be able to show that the numbers pan out, but is that enough to really justify using them that way? And
getting
I think
slammed,
that's a really interesting question.
What about choice of cars? What about vehicles?
Oh, the type of vehicle you drive?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, sure, yeah. That's definitely plays a factor in what you're going to pay for insurance, for sure. That's one of the one of the ones at the top of the list.
It used to be across the board. Corvette drivers were always charged more. But then it was, what, in 06 when Corvette changed? And it was because of the cost to repair the vehicle.
Right.
And that's why, like, a Caprice was a lot cheaper than a Corvette. But then when Corvette went to the separate, it was at 06, they went to that separate nose, the removable.
Right.
The insurance rates went down, I heard. I knew a guy that bought one. He says, yeah, it's cheaper than my last car because it's more easily repairable than the last model car. So
Maybe the demographic went down because most Corvette newer Corvette owners these days are a bunch of old guys.
Are older, right.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, no, cost of repair, you know, that is definitely something that they take a look at. It's not just, oh, you drive a sports car, and that means you're somehow a less careful driver, and that's why we're going to pay, you know, charge you more. The cost of repair and such definitely does play a role, and that's important to keep in mind.
You know, I found something out years ago. Now it's 20 years ago now. I bought a BMW motorcycle at the time, and I was switching from a Harley-Davidson to that, and I called the insurance company. Said, yeah, I want to switch. And actually, it was before I bought this one. I had a couple in mind, and I wasn't sure which one I wanted to buy. And I told them the one model was, at the time, I think it was an R1100 RT. And the woman was like, oh, she came back with some really high number. I said, wait a minute, why so high? And she goes, well, it has an R in the model name. I'm like, what? So I'm thinking, like, I said to her, do you understand what the R in the model name of a BMW motorcycle means? It means it's a two-cylinder engine. That was their,
radial, yeah.
It was, a two-cylinder engine, a posed cylinder. And I said, I think you're thinking of bikes like a GSX-R,
right,
or the CBR, all the Japanese bikes that the R meant, like, the race model. And she says, well, no, I really didn't know that. And she knew nothing about motorcycles. I said, this bike has, it has an electric windshield. It's got ABS brakes, which was kind of a front runner at the time. I actually educated her, and nothing she could do, of course, because she was just reading off a piece of paper. And I realized that, hey, not everybody you talk to on the phone doesn't really, the insurance companies don't always have all the information that needs to be known. So that was just a little interesting
that's
thing.
That's a great, I think that's a really interesting anecdote. And because it does serve as a reminder to people that I think folks have a tendency to just take whatever the insurance company tells them, as sort of the final say in things, and I don't think a lot of people ask enough questions or dig into some of the stuff that they get back from their insurance company, whether it's an auto policy or a home policy. Like, people should be proactive in having those types of conversations if something, or even just asking a question. Explain to me why this is suddenly so high, right? Just open up the conversation a little bit.
The interesting thing was, I didn't buy the bike that was like 69 horsepower. I ended up buying one that was a K model, which started with a K. It was a K1100 LT, and that thing had 100 rear wheel horsepower with 100 foot-pounds of torque. I mean, that is the rocket ship.
Yeah,
and that
one
was like, oh yeah, no problem. And they insured it for very little money. I was like, so there you go. There's the dichotomy. I was like, okay, good for me. But
right.
Whatever. But yeah, so that's Interesting. Nick, what else is involved in being an insurance analyst? Because that's an interesting topic. I mean, statistics and me are an interesting subject because I talk about this with my wife and family all the time. Just because they put out a number, don't believe it. Right. 8 out of 10 doctors said, 8 out of 10 dentists, how many were in the room?
I like to meet number 9,
My question is, what was the sample group? Is there 100 or is there 100,000? Because statistically significant data is based, it's more significant when there's a bigger sample group. So
sure, yeah. And from my end, I always tell people, I don't use the term insurance analyst, but rather insurance journalist, right?
Oh.
Because I do, the work that I do for a site like Insurance Quotes, they'll send me the data. For instance, this study I was talking about at the top was conducted by a company called Quadrant. And Quadrant conducted the study itself, looking at each individual state and calculating the premium increases. So they'll send me all the data, and then it's my job to essentially call different sources that I have, experts in the industry, experts who are involved in some advocacy stuff related to insurance, and just kind of giving them the data and saying, hey, what do you make of this? And sort of synthesizing all of that, synthesizing the data with expert opinions from those who are, intimately familiar with the industry and can just provide some context to help the average driver, the average reader of a story like this, unpack it and realize, okay, what does this mean for me as as a U.S. driver, as a U.S. insurance consumer.
So, Nick,
so that's kind of what goes into it. And every time it's different. It's not always the stories I work on aren't always super data heavy. They're sometimes more anecdotal, it's always kind of the same process, reaching out, getting other folks to weigh in on it and bringing some of my experience too. Right. I mean, I've been doing this now for almost 10 years.
Okay.
And so, I definitely bring a degree of knowledge and history to whatever the topic is.
Yeah. Where can people find your journalistic aptitude? Where can we find your writings? Is it publicly available or is it industry based?
Sure. No, my work is an individual, so I'm a freelance writer. Insurance Quotes is not the only site that I write for. So I aggregate all of my stuff on my own personal website, nickdiulio.com. Mm-hmm. And then you can also go to insurancequotes.com, mm-hmm. And you could type my name into the search bar and see pretty much all of the pieces that I've written over the last, almost 10 years for the site. They'd all be on there as well.
And I have to say, I have to thank Gabrielle from at the Rosen Group for the contact because they get in touch with us, and that's how we get guys like you. So I want to thank them for the contact because it's always informational and great stuff for the listeners to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm happy to come back and chat with you guys anytime.
We'll keep you on the list, and we'll get you. We'll do that. We will do that again. We'll be back in touch. We'll talk.
To hear more from you. That's for sure.
You have all contact information. You can reach out to me if you have something you'd like to get. That you think is pressing. You'd like to get on and we'll see if we can find you a spot right away.
Excellent.
Okay, excellent. Nick. Well, thank you for the call. We appreciate the information, and let's drive safe out there.
You got it. You too, guys. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Thanks, bro. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye.
So long. That was
very informative.
Yes.
Because insurance is, let's face it, you got to have it.
That's right.
You know what I mean? It's like going to the grocery store or the gas station or whatever, and you got to go out and you got to buy your insurance too.
Right.
And let's face it, knowing how it works a little bit is... more information, the better.
I'll tell you what, you don't need insurance. We're going to visit a place that, the place does, but you don't always think of it as with insurance. And then we'll come back with a little more Motor Mouth Radio with Ray and Joe. Keep it where you got it.
Wow. Wow, that's like crazy loud music. What are you listening to?
The best music on the radio. Come on, this is the Iron Age.
The what age?
The Iron Age, the show that brings you various types of heavy metal music from all over the spectrum.
Really? I've never heard of it. How do you know so much about it?
I'm the host.
Wait, if you're the host, how are you driving this car and on the radio at the same time?
Come on, don't ask so many questions. The Iron Age with me, Justin Sullivan, delivers the best variety of heavy metal music that you could ever ask for. Only on the Iron Age will you find music as ridiculously heavy as Meshuggah and Oceano, along with chill and relaxing tunes like Tool and Deftones.
Well, that sounds cool and all, but I think I'm just going to listen to something else.
Ooh, I think that's going to be a problem. I think you're going to have to find another ride then.
What?
Whether you're a hot rod or a Camaro chick, the Motormouths will always do the trick. Motormouth Radio, baby.
All right, we went from insurance quotes to Drag City with Ray Guarino, Joe D on Motormouth Radio. Your hosts and friends at 516-572-7440. Joe just poked himself in the schnozola with a headphone.
I don't know. See, you can't let me have it.
That's why you were never the equipment guy in the band.
That's it.
Joe, get that mic stand out of the back of the band.
You never know. Let's face it.
Speaking of equipment,
I was going to say, why are we playing warm weather music already?
Because we're hoping.
Wishful thinking or what?
Yes, we're hoping for the warm weather because that's what we want to do. So let's see if we can warm up everything. And say hi to the Motormouths. Strange.
Ray, Joe D, it's Glenn the Car Hunter.
Hey, Glenn, what's going on?
Hey, what's going? Listen, I'm about ready to start another revolution.
Okay. Number nine.
And why is that?
Well, you were talking before about the car show at Tobey Beach, right?
Yes.
Right. I got to tell you something. It drives me crazy that the only people that are going to pay to go in there are going to be the car owners, which is the reason why everybody is going there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I follow you. It's free to spectators. Which is
it's
how they get people. How they get people in? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it drives me crazy.
Right. That's a topic that's been talked about a lot, Joe. Where you know the car, you bring your car, which is the draw for the show, and you have to pay. Like they should be paying you to bring the car. Is kind of where Glenn's coming from, I think.
As a car owner, I guess I'm just used to like handing people money.
Exactly.
You know, it's just okay. It's another one. It's like that. Beginning scene in Married with Children where everybody sits there with their hand out and just hand out money. You're a car owner, you just hand out money. It's the same thing.
So, Glenn, it isn't like this all over the country, is it, Glenn?
Well, I don't have a problem paying if I go to an event like an NSRA event, National Street Rod Association, or a Good Guys event that rents out a stadium, has indoor places for vendors, food courts and places to sit down, and if it's a hot day, you can go inside and it's cool inside, and they bring all the major vendors. I mean, they have to pay. We understand that. They're renting out a venue. I mean, the Titan Stadium in Nashville is going to cost a pretty penny for the weekend.
Sure. But
this is a county beach that's owned by the county of Nassau, and they're not paying anybody to be there. I mean, yeah, maybe they have some people. They're mostly volunteers from what I've heard.
Right.
To come out and collect the money at the gate for the cars and, park people in the parking lot. But I don't mind paying something, but for the car owners to come in and take $25 out of their pocket to sit in the parking lot while everybody else comes in for free and look at your car.
Is it 25? Do we know that for a fact?
Either 20 or 25. Okay. I know that.
I didn't have that data. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, and they suggest bringing a can of food, too, on top of it, which, that's great to donate food to people who need it. But But to pay to go sit in a parking lot, it would make more sense to drive in my everyday car, park in the parking lot, check out the cars, and then head home without having to get stuck there all day.
You know, you're right, Glenn, and there's something about the whole thing that people are into where they feel that they, like, everybody wants to see their car. You know that your 32 Hupmobile it's the cat's ass. Everybody has to see that car. And you know that when you're there with your duster and you got your chair set up and all your cool crap that everybody just has to see that because you got the best thing in the world. Well, I think that's where the breakdown came, because these guys will pay to let you so that you can see the best thing that I walk right past when I'm at a car show. I don't know. You know, do you follow along what I'm saying? You know, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but, you know. Like,
yeah, I mean, you go to a large event, and you notice people traveling from around the country, and you're going to see some of the best custom-built cars or restored cars, you know, these 100-point restorations down to every last marking on the chassis. And that's something to see. Like, you go to the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals in Chicago, you're going to see a good show when you go there.
Oh, yeah.
And you're not walking around a parking lot with nothing else to do, with no bathroom. I mean, you know, the best part of it is when you go to the show and they charge you and there's a porta potty in the middle of the field. And you're like,
right.
Wow, this is great. You guys must have put a lot of expense into this entire thing.
Yeah, you dug that hole really deep there. Yeah. I know.
Yeah, I'm as Ray knows, I'm heading down to Tennessee, and I'll be at the Rod Run down there in Pigeon Forge.
Right.
Which is about a round trip one way, back the other way, probably around 14 miles worth of cars.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And unless you want to go in the convention center and see the show, which is, you know, there's an organized show, it's really not the best, but it's only $10 to go in. But everything else out there is just a free-for-all. Just people, no one pays to park their cars. No one pays to get in. And I find in events like that, I think I have more fun. I meet more people, and there's more cars there.
Yeah. Now, I've never been to that event. My daughter has been, as a matter of fact, and told me about it and sent me pictures. And that's what got my wife and I going down to Tennessee ourselves to check out the we're not going to be there for that event. That's coming up in a couple of weeks, right?
That's actually just coming next weekend.
Next week, okay, yeah.
Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
But I do know, and from seeing your pictures, of course, on your blog, the Car Hunter blog, that's people should check that out. You do put up quite a extensive collection of photos from any place you go. And
it's really cool. You can see, it's almost like being there.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I usually don't bring a car if I go to a big event. So I'm going to sit there with my car. I'm not going to be able to walk around.
Right.
And it's just easy to walk around and check out the cars. And I'll especially with something like the Rod Runs, you kind of venture off onto the side streets and the parking lots of the hotels. You find some stuff sitting there. Cause a lot of people go because they just want to get their car out and be a part of it, but they don't necessarily need to be in the spotlight on the front line so people can see the cars.
Right.
You find a lot of interesting stuff. And something like that is basically a giant swap meet.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's looking to trade, sell, trade up, trade down, project cars on trailers. It's like my renaissance. You know, I go there and I just, everything else is gone for a couple of days.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Of course, our buddy Bill says that, you know, that's why when a guy who's putting on a show needs to have perks to the people who are paying. And there's a couple of ways of doing that. You know,
bags.
Yeah, right.
Launch.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Yeah, sure.
That's
A lot of people don't realize if you contact places like Summit or any of the big parts places that obviously make a lot of money off of us because we're constantly in their catalog, they'll be happy to support a car show and send over some free stuff.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Hemmings, in fact, when I was doing my show years ago, Hemmings was one of the places would do that. How many do you need? They send you bags and all sorts of cool stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great place to get in touch with a lot of car people for them, so it's worth it. I mean, I'm not feeling too happy because I was supposed to be at Coker Tire yesterday.
Ah.
For that giant cruise, which is 100% free for everybody.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it takes up. There's an area near the stadium near Coca Tire, and everywhere you look, up every side street, now they've expanded into the stadium parking lots.
Right.
And there's thousands of cars there. It's becoming one of the largest events, and it was supposed to be a big, well, I'm sure there was, a large swap meet as part of it, too, which is they're starting to move towards that. Plus, you get the tour of Corky Coker's crazy collection in his own personal museum.
Yeah, cool stuff.
And they have a bunch of blend tires for sale, so it's funny. You get there early in the morning. And you're just, settling in, and you see people running around with tires under each arm.
How cool is that, right?
That's the greatest. Like, you see the smile on their face. Yeah. Like, oh, man, look what I got.
And me, I'd be hungry for chocolate donuts after I saw that. Like, where's the vat of milk?
Yeah.
Well, Glenn, we thank you for sharing that information with us and your views, of course. That's great. It's something that everybody should be thinking about. And And now we got to go because Kim is behind us.
I like the song you queued up.
You know, I didn't know.
Did you do that on
yes,
purpose?
I did. See, I didn't know. I didn't see Kim in the window, and it got me scared. So I said, I got to be ready in case she's not here. So I picked the Springsteen song to start her show.
Look at you.
Yeah, there you go.
He's quite the pro, you know. He's gotten the hang of this.
I know, you know what? I'm going to keep that song.
Okay.
It's an excellent song to start with.
Yes. And you'll have to stay tuned in to Kim's show.
Thunder Road
to see what I picked to kick off the show.
Synergy at its best.
All right, Glenn, we got to run because now we got to really get out of here.
About the time.
Okay, take care, guys.
Thanks for the call, Glenn. So long. All right, with that, Joe.
We did it again. Fried another hour.
And we'll be back next week with Shane from maxleverage.com. That's the
that wrench guy thing.
Right.
Hey, cool.
So stay tuned, and we'll see you next week. More Motor Mouth Radio. Bye.